All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. But today on the show, we are heading back to our Breaking It Apart series, two in a row, actually. Or not in a row, but we just did one on The Thing a couple weeks ago. And it had been a while since our last Breaking It Apart entry, which, for those who don't know, is basically piecing it together in reverse. We're going to look, instead of a new movie, we're going to look at a classic movie and the movies inspired by it. And today, actually, is going to be even a little more different than that, because instead of just looking at one classic movie, we're looking at an entire classic series, and that is a series that I just finished marathon watching for Halloween. It is the Friday the 13th series, and I had a lot of fun watching these movies. They are just so ridiculous, and we get into some puzzle pieces in the sense of movies that were inspired by either the overall Friday the 13th series or by some of the specific entries or just by the man, Jason Voorhees himself. So it's a great conversation. With me is Tyler from the Not Just New Movies and the Fivecast podcast. And we had a great conversation about these movies and about some of the things inspired by them. So before we get into that, I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can, of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And there's actually a great little thread going already about the best Friday the 13th movies. So check that out. And of course, we also have a Patreon where I have been posting advanced episodes of Piecing It Together. There's bonus episodes of Awesome Movie Year, and there is some bonus content from my music career. And also, going up today, I believe, on that Patreon is a silly little song I made called Jason H to celebrate the launch of the sixth season of Awesome Movie Year on the films of 1984, which kicked off with Beverly Hills Cop and, of course, the classic Axel F. theme. I made a little theme for Jason Harris, one of the hosts of Awesome Movie Year. It's Jason H., and it's available as a download on our Patreon, so make sure to check out our Patreon and lots of other great content on there and on our main feeds as well, of course. So let's get into this conversation about Friday the 13th. All right, so today joining us, we have got Tyler from Not Just New Movies podcast. Tyler, how's it going?
Hey, David, how are you? This is the first time in 10 years of podcasting that I've been invited on as a guest. So you have been incredibly gracious, and you may also have made a grave error.
We'll see what happens.
We'll find out.
Well, I am I'm excited to be doing this episode. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm not much of a movie binger, honestly, and something made me want to watch all of these Friday the 13th movies, and along with that was your tweet at me about the fan films, which I had heard a lot of great things about before that tweet. Were you like majorly in a Friday the 13th binge or anything like that at the time when you got in touch with me?
No, I think I had done it last year. Every few years, mm-hmm. I'll do like a Halloween binge, and Friday the 13th has been one of my returning favorites. Sure. And I had been following you on Twitter and kind of got a sense of your show and what you guys do. And when I saw some of those fan films, I was like, well, that's kind of cool. Maybe Piecing It Together would review those as their own film. I thought it would be its own film. But then you informed me about your Breaking It Apart, I think, is the episode theme.
Sure, yep.
And then I watched as you didn't really have a meltdown going through all of them, which some people do, but it was interesting to hear your kind of quick reviews as each installment went by. So it was, and you hadn't seen them since maybe they'd come out, or
I'm still trying to figure out if I've even seen all of them in the past. Like, those are all movies, just like most slasher movies that, you know, right. In high school you rent them all, you know, it's like blockbuster nights every weekend. Yeah. And it's like I don't know what I've seen, what I haven't seen, but it's something that was like on my to-do list for many, many years. I've always, and we'll get into this more as we get into the conversation, but I've always considered myself a Jason guy in the big, you know, Freddy, Jason, or Michael Myers debate. And right. I've always considered myself a Jason guy, but I barely have seen the movies, even though I consider myself a Jason guy, just because they always kind of stuck with me. The ones that I had seen, I just remember loving the ones I had seen. And so I've always wanted to go back and just force myself to binge them all, even though I'm not a binger. So it was fun.
The great thing about that series is Jason Voorhees is just prime humor, like prime humor, the ability to make him funny. Like Mike Myers is not really, you know, he's got a lot of baggage. Freddy Krueger is sometimes too funny.
Right.
Like his jokes just are like dad jokes sometimes. But with Jason, you can like form humor because he never says anything.
Sure.
And that's why
Funny in itself.
Yeah. So the situational comedy is even better. But there are a few clunkers in there. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I'm sure I'm excited to
see which ones you think clunk along with the series.
So before we get too deep into Friday the 13th, I do want to have you introduce yourself to my listeners. Tell people about you and your podcast.
Well, 10 years ago, David, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary at the Not Just New Movies podcast. It's hosted by Ben Pearson, and I'm a usual co-host. And we've been on and off for about 10 years. We did it for a few years and then came back a few years later. And then we did a series called NJNM The Return, where we returned and only watched movies with the word return in the title. And this iteration for our 10 year is NJNM to the third power, a la the Alien movie, but only watching third installments. And I think the hope was that Ben, the host, will have not seen any of the other films in the series and only watch the third installment, and then we review it that way. So we're mixing it up a little bit, but we have a 6-episode limited series coming out. And so if you have a link in the description or a iTunes account, you can find us there. And we're going to be doing a crossover, I think, with you, David, and we'll be not just new moving, a very special third installment of a beloved franchise. I'm sure you can guess which one.
Yeah, right. I didn't watch these movies for nothing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right.
So that will be fun. And yeah, I love the concept, by the way. I love the idea that you're coming back just for third movies. That's so ridiculous and great.
There's so many movie podcasts that I try to come up with a limited series because we don't want to work too hard. And also something that, you know, kind of like a theme, you know, it's as simple as that. So any time that I can come up, I think another failed theme was, obviously we have like a Western theme we might do someday, but I'll have to come up with a pun or something for that to really sell it. So we'll see.
I'm sure you'll find something. So let's get into some Friday the 13th here.
All right.
So like you had mentioned, we are doing a Breaking It Apart today. So we're going to be twisting up the format of Piecing It Together. And instead of looking at the movies that inspired the Friday the 13th series, we are going to take the series and look at movies that were inspired by them. And some of these movies that we talk about will be inspired by, you know, individual entries in the series, because, you know, some of these movies are fairly different from one another. But some will just be by the overall thing, the overall, the Jason, the slasher, all the things that make Friday the 13th what it is. So there's kind of a lot to pick from. So this will be, I believe, possibly a little all over the place, but it should be conversation. Yes, that's the best way to do it. So we will end up talking about a lot of the movies in the Friday the 13th series as well along the way. But yeah, let's start jumping into some puzzle pieces here. What do you have for the first movie that you think may have been inspired by this series?
Now this, I'm going to try to go in chronological order of when these movies, at least the movies on my list, when they were released. And now,
okay,
this particular film is 1981's The Burning, which I thought would be a film inspired by Friday the 13th, the first one, the original, from 1980. So because it's 1981, I figured it was developed after the success of Friday the 13th. In actuality, it was a film developed almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It is about the urban legend of Cropsey. Have you seen The Burning, David?
This is one of those movies I certainly know of, and okay. I think I probably saw in high school, but I don't quite remember.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know how far back the urban legend goes, but there are kids at camp, they torture some janitor, he gets burned, mm-hmm. the titular burning, and then he comes and slashes them like 5 years later, 10 years later, something like that. So I think it itself may have inspired the Nightmare on Elm Street installment because, you know, janitor-esque character getting burned, but Cropsey, the legend of Cropsey. I think George Costanza's in this film, Jason Alexander.
Nice.
I think he gets his fingers cut off at some point. He uses hedge clippers instead of a machete or a butcher's knife, but it is a good one if you have a like schlocky camp slasher itch that you definitely need to scratch. The Burning is a good installment. There was another movie called The Burning, and because this movie was titled that, they went and developed another movie called The Madman, which I haven't seen. And I think it is also about Cropsey. So there are two Cropsey movies, in case you're a big Cropsey fan tuning in.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very big urban legend, you know, aspect to the whole series here. And that's something that, of course, comes up in horror movies to today, even. Like, that's right. always like a way to get people talking about the killer and to, you know, start scaring people ahead of time before the kills start coming, or maybe you get a cold open or something, and then you start getting all that. But yeah, absolutely, that whole urban legend aspect. And like I said, I don't recall if I've seen The Burning, but yeah, that seems to be like the same kind of a thing there.
Yeah, and I think by Friday the 13th Part 2, Jason has become an urban legend.
Right.
He's kind of an urban legend in the first one, but he's definitely one in Part 2. So this is a great, if you're taking in the franchise, this is one to add on to your list to binge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll go to my first piece. Okay. And this is an incredibly obvious one. I got a couple of really obvious ones, a couple of out there ones, but okay. I'm going to start off with Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street
series.
There you
go. Hell yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, back and forth, inspiring each other, of course, right. along the way. I was actually surprised. I am not the biggest horror guy. I love what I love with horror. Like, I like the funny ones and I like the gory ones, but I'm not really big too much on the most mainstream of horror. I was surprised that it didn't come out the first one till 1984. When I read that, looking that up for this, I was like, oh, I would have thought maybe even earlier, but certainly at the same time that they came out. But the fact that we were already four entries into the series, that was very surprising to me when I read that before this conversation. Obviously the director of the first one had worked with Wes Craven on some stuff, and I mean there's just so much of the same there's so much of the same, like, in the ether of the world of horror that went into both of these series, and then they just continued to, I think, one up each other over the years, especially through the 80s.
Well, the cool thing about Nightmare on Elm Street is and I'm not a big horror guy either. I think I watched them just for the experience. And for some reason, I just really love franchises that just churn out installments every year for like 10 years. But the visual effects of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, that's like, that's their bread and butter. That's why I tune into those films. So even if, like you mentioned, they try to top it. Like, I would think Nightmare on Elm Street definitely has topped Friday the 13th as far as special effects go.
Sure.
But yeah, there's the certain six or seven teenagers that have to be murdered by the killer at some point, you know, every film. Like, that's pretty standard.
Right. Absolutely. Sex is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that like have become the tropes that we know and love from these kinds of movies that were part of that back and forth, I think, between these two series. And of course, you know, we eventually get to Freddy v. Jason.
Right.
And so, I mean, that is, you know, of course, part of the overall story of this, these two franchises being tied together.
And I think the other thing I love about this series, Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween, is that they build on the mythology of these characters just because they need to make another movie. Mm-hmm. And I had said something about the new Halloween, the 2018 one, where I was a little upset that, and I'm not trying to be like the toxic fanboy or anything, because I don't think I would call myself a fanboy of the Halloween franchise. I'm not taking to the message boards or anything, but the, you know, sometimes I'm like, ah, they could have just, you know, expanded on, you know, take one little snippet of the mythology and build on that. And right. In the 80s, these movies did that. And it's really cool to look back and say, where did they come up with this stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And they weren't too worried about, like, they either did continue on or they didn't. Like, right. it was just like, what's going to be best for this particular one?
Right. Whatever. Exactly. And I love the Friday the 13th, like, catch-ups at the beginning of the older ones.
I was surprised by that.
I really dig that.
I love that. That was really fun. That added to a very fun throwback thing to it. They don't do that enough anymore, I don't think.
I always think it's probably the lack of VHS at the time, where
sure.
You probably weren't watching them at home, so a year has passed since the last time you saw it. Just kind of catch up really, on that last time on Friday the 13th.
That's a really interesting point. I love that because, yeah, these movies, you wouldn't have been able to watch them as easily. And now, you know, I've got my box set. I just jump right from one to the next so quickly, you know. Well, what do you got for your next piece here?
All right. So this one, definitely, I even double checked to make sure that this was inspired by Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D.
Okay.
And I don't want to spoil too much about it because David and Ben and I might be talking about how blatantly 3D it is. So I went with the next best thing, Jaws 3D.
Hell yeah.
1983. Oh, I think maybe, what was the part three? I think Friday the 13th part three was 1982. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is referred to as, like, I don't know, the silver age of 3D.
Sure.
If we're talking comic books, where it was coming back. The Blob in the 50s was in 3D. Now we're back with Jason Voorhees and Jaws in 3D. And this movie is, I just recently watched it. I think within the last year I bought, it was because I watched the Jaws movies for July 4th. Mm-hmm. And so we watched Jaws 1 through 4, which 4, not that bad. Actually pretty good. Jaws 2, I really dig Jaws 2. And I think Jaws 3 is probably the worst of the four. Mm. Because it is so badly filmed for 3D. And I've always wondered why we keep coming back to 3D, because it is always just, you can just tell they've filmed it in a way where the characters or the shark is reaching out to the audience.
Yeah.
And it was really just a way to get, you know, butts in seats. But the thing you might not know about Jaws 3 was it continues the story of the family from the first one. So I knew Dennis Quaid was in it, but I didn't know Dennis Quaid played Sheriff Brody's son. And he had moved to SeaWorld or something to study marine life. And somehow the Jaws shark gets into the SeaWorld. So it's really funny and it's bad. I don't know if they sell the 3D version that you can watch with like classic 3D glasses, but it's definitely inspired by the schlockiness of Friday the 13th Part 3.
You know, that brings up an interesting thing. You know, right now we're in this moment with COVID and with, you know, no major movies coming out. So there's all these classic movies at the theaters. Yeah. I haven't gone back yet, even though going to the movies is my absolute favorite thing in the world. And my favorite way to watch movies. I hope to be able to go back at some point soon. I hope we continue to see classic movies in the theater, and I hope some of these 3D movies somehow make the cut, because I would love to see Friday the 13th 3 in 3D and Jaws 3D in 3D. Like, I'd actually love to see that, and my TV doesn't do 3D, so
yeah,
you know, it'd be great to go to the theater and see it.
It's one of those experiences that you just have to have, but it is a collective experience. You need people in your crew making fun of the movie while you're watching it with you.
That's like my dream right now. It's been so long since I've been to the movies to go with a bunch of friends to see Jaws 3D or Friday 13th 3D. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Double feature. They used to do, or they still do. I live by a movie theater that did like $5 or whatever Halloween movies. And that was really cool. So the fact that, you know, that's gone right now is hurting pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's also because, you know, it's also great because I don't think as many people, the masses don't appreciate classic cinema. So when you do go to those retro showings, they're pretty sparse. Like you get the theater to yourself, essentially.
Yeah, it is. So. It's your own little party for sure.
Yeah.
So I will go from your blockbuster Jaws to another set of blockbusters. This one might be a little bit out there, but follow me here. I'm going to go with the MCU Infinity Saga.
Whoa.
So this may not have been inspired by the Friday the 13th movies in any real way.
I love it.
But what I'm seeing here is a continuing overarching story with different directors, different actors, different cast each time, except for maybe some crossover here and there when, you know, a character returns or whatever, and pumping them out year after year after year. There just keeps being more and more of them. If they decide to make one of them just a one-off that doesn't really fit in with the other ones, then that's what it is. If they decide that it's going to directly continue the last one, then that's what it is. And just somehow, by the skin of their teeth, it all kind of ties together into a series. And of course, the Marvel people, you know, I'm not the biggest superhero guy, but they did a pretty damn good job of tying all that together. Maybe not as much the Friday the 13th series, but it still is a series that when you sit and watch it all, you get this kind of complete Jason experience. And so, you know, more or less, they're kind of successful long before the MCU in stringing together so many completely different movies that are tonally different in some ways and have different writers, different directors. Pretty much the composer is the only thing that kind of like stays together. You know?
Yeah. I think you've convinced me. I feel like Feige is a huge Jason Voorhees fan now.
I think he might be. I really think so.
Seeing a closet fan. And at first I thought you meant the two movies that, but you're talking the entire MCU.
Yes, I'm talking the whole MCU site series. I'm talking all these different directors, all these different characters that like some of them cross over, some don't, but they all somehow just tie together.
That's great.
I said it was out there.
No, it's definitely something that was done before, and then they've actually, you know, they've perfected it, some would say.
Right.
I like the idea of it, some grad student going, man, Jason Voorhees built the steps to the MCU movie cinema universe.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Someone might say Bond, but I went with Jason.
Oh, Bond. Oh, don't even get me started on the Bond continuity. It's all over. Is it a name? Is it a name that's issued to the new agents? We don't know.
No one knows.
That's a whole episode in itself.
So what do you got for your next piece?
I'm kind of torn because I wanted to talk about The Evil Dead 2. Ooh. Or Evil Dead 2, I guess. But Evil Dead 1 came out around the same time as... Was it 1981?
I believe so.
But I feel like because these movies are so simple, like you just need teenagers in the woods and something coming after them. So that, of course, when I was thinking about doing this episode, I was like, that's really all the Friday the 13th, at least the early Friday the 13th movies are, is kids in the woods at a camp, something coming after them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's Evil Dead in a nutshell. And, you know, I'm sure everyone listening knows Evil Dead 2 is just a better version remake of Evil Dead. Although it has some, I think the only, this is why I'm hesitant to talk about it, is because I think the only reason my brain was drawn to these was kids, teenagers, woods, something evil afoot. I don't know if you had these on your list, but it's kind of a hard sell because they are vastly different films by vastly different directors.
I'm in with bringing Evil Dead into this conversation. I have been accused of bringing Evil Dead up way too much on this podcast, so I'm happy someone else did it for a change. But you know what? Screw it. Let's include Evil Dead 2, because also, you know, the sequel is it really both Army of Darkness as well does recap the previous one, so we've got that as well. And then of course the other connection, which I don't know if this follows the whole breaking it apart thing or not, but it's just a connection regardless, is of course Jason is apparently a deadite according to the director of Jason Goes to Hell.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no. This is just a few years ago. A bunch of fans, like I don't know if it was like a Reddit Ask Me Anything or something like that. They asked him because, you know, there's in Jason Goes to Hell, there's a scene in the basement where Jason Voorhees' mom, was it Pamela Voorhees, had a Necronomicon in the basement, and he confirmed very it. Cool. As far as he's concerned, Jason is a deadite, which is completely insane. That's awesome. Yeah, I love it. I love that connection, especially because I really do enjoy these movies. I am in the minority that really enjoy Jason Goes to Hell, but that's another conversation.
I've been waiting for the mention of Jason Goes to Hell, and I don't hate it, but I have some issues.
okay.
Well, here's what happened. Here's the history behind me and Jason Goes to Hell. So when I was a kid walking around the video store, that was one of the covers that just was burned into my brain. Like the horrific mask, the snake through the eyes, the burning fire, and then Jason Goes to Hell, which I knew who Jason was because I could see the other installments list on the shelf. So I was like, okay, Jason went to Manhattan in one of them. Okay, Jason lives in this one. Now this time he's going to hell. So I was so excited to watch that one that I actually watched that one first before watching 2 through 8.
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah. So it refers to this, like, he's like a, I don't know what he is, like a bounty hunter, the cowboy character. And like the very beginning where Jason is just kind of like living in the woods and the CIA or the military need to take him out. So I was convinced that all 8 movies prior had been built up to this particular moment, this particular installment. That was not the case. Eventually found out it was because what the property went from Paramount to New Line Cinema, I think. Mm-hmm. And that was the first New Line Cinema installment. So, and David, he doesn't go to hell. The whole movie.
Not at all.
Never does he enter the realm of the devil, which is just a horrible false advertisement.
It's such a bad false advertisement. That cover has nothing to do, and it's an awesome cover. It's like one of the most memorable VHS tape covers like ever, but it is nothing to do with the movie. And yeah, I mean, that all just speaks to this director just really having some balls on him to like go in and make this movie. Like, it's just, it's crazy. That's why I like it though.
He recreated the mythology in a sense, but I'm convinced that the spoiler alert at the end of Jason Takes Manhattan, he's a small boy. 25, 30 years have gone by and he's now full grown Jason again for part 9.
Yeah.
Is that at all possible?
Why not?
Sure, because the mask has the toxic remnants of the sludge from part 8. So,
as we've established, the MCU is better with continuity.
Yeah, but definitely.
That movie is just so much fun.
Yeah,
that movie is just it's stupid as hell, but it's just I don't know. Maybe my brain was a little loopy after 8 other movies. You know, but I had so much fun with it. Just big swings, basically. That director took big swings with the idea of what Jason could be. And of course, you know, the fact that Jason Voorhees himself is really only in the movie for like 5 minutes, that's not a positive. But what does happen with the character, I thought was like really just fun and interesting. I mean, it's just a very over-the-top movie.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a head-scratcher, but it's not... it's not part five dull. I feel right. Like part five is my least favorite. So
sure.
Anything pushing it past the line of part five is okay by me, I guess.
I'm with you. And I have found that in posting my ranking after I binged these all, that there are some horror fans that really love five because they were trying something different, I guess. I don't really know. I don't get it though. Five definitely worst one to me. But let's move on to another piece.
You need to have
here.
Them on the show to have them answer for that claim.
Have them defend that craziness. I don't even know. All right. So I'm going to go with another really obvious one that has to be brought up. And that is another Wes Craven series, Scream.
Yes. Yeah. That was one of mine as well.
Yeah, you did have it. Yeah, it has to be on there. Now, I feel like depending on the entry of Friday the 13th, you're kind of getting directly in with Scream, or you're getting kind of the opposite, because like with right. the sixth one, it's so, you know, it's meta, it's very self-referential and stuff like that. It's very funny. But then you got these other ones, especially the earlier entries in the Friday the 13th series, where it's like nobody has seen a horror movie ever, you know? And so it's like
right.
kind of almost the opposite of Scream, where everybody knows horror movies inside and out, and they know every little bit and piece of what makes a horror movie tick. But definitely though, you know, regardless, either one of those two extremes, it's still just like the ultimate slasher series to be referencing when, you know, talking about this stuff in Scream, when these characters are all referencing horror movies.
Yeah, and I pick specifically Scream 2 because, mm-hmm. spoiler alert for Scream 2, spoiler alert for lots of these movies.
Sure.
It's the mom, the killer at the end of Scream 2, which a la Friday the 13th Part 1, which is,
right.
of course, one of the trivia questions in Scream Part 2, Part 1.
Uh-huh.
And so they're all over, they know their stuff when they wrote this. And it wasn't that. What Part 9 came out in 1993 and Scream 1 was 96.
Sure.
And Halloween Part 6, I think, was 1995. So it wasn't like it was too far away from the realm of these classic horror franchises, which I find interesting because Scream is like, I'm sure if someone's favorite Friday the 13th is Part 5, I'm sure Scream is someone's favorite horror franchise.
Sure.
And not that I'm saying Scream is bad, but
right.
the fact that it kind of almost overlaps with these classic 80s and 90s slashers, I don't know, it's just brilliant how it came out around the same time and became super successful. So I guess we were still grasping at that, you know, 15 or 20 years after these movies kind of hit the screen.
Right, right. And that's the interesting thing about, you know, next year, I believe, we're getting a new Scream movie.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, like, obviously it's not like the last couple have been that great anyway. I mean, the last one wasn't that bad or anything, but I do wonder though if the public is that invested in slashers currently.
Yeah.
I mean there were the Happy Death Day movies, which were pretty fun, but other than that, I don't know if slashers are, you know, in the ether that much right now.
Have you by chance watched the Scream TV show on, I think it's MTV, but it might be streaming on Netflix?
I did not, no.
It's pretty good, and it kind of is a new take, I suppose, on Scream, but Scream is just a take on other slashers. But it is kind of an interesting teen drama, I suppose, if you're hearkening back to that nostalgic era of, you know, CW shows, except it's Scream.
Well, speaking of the Scream TV series, before we jump on to your next piece, I've never seen the Friday the 13th TV series. Should I?
I haven't either.
Okay.
Maybe
cool.
That's
a
future episode. 10 years from now, another.
we can do
new
it.
TV.
I'm down. I am down. What do you got for your next piece here?
So to piggyback off of Part 9, at the very, very end, when Jason eventually, in the last 2 minutes of the film, goes to hell, he is dragged there by Freddy Krueger, and you see like the scene where his little glove pops out and grabs the mask and pulls him into the hell sand or whatever.
Amazing.
And and then that movie was supposed to happen way sooner than it actually did. It was in development hell for 10 years before popping on to screens, and it was super successful. I don't know if you went and saw it with bright-eyed and bushy-tailed like I did in high school, but it was, you know, it was, again, kind of like Scream, where you were like, you knew who Jason and Freddy were, and all of a sudden now they're in a movie fighting each other. So it was pretty cool. And I thought to myself, I was like, there's got to be a movie that was inspired by Freddy versus Jason, because that's just what I want to talk about. And I landed on Alien versus Predator.
There you go.
Which is two franchises versus each other. Went and saw this in the same fashion as I saw Freddy versus Jason, kind of got amped for it. Hadn't seen any Alien movies or Predator movies, just knew the IP. And I knew that when you put verses in a title, things are going to get crazy. As a kid, again, at the video store, I always used to have the or the Super Nintendo Terminator versus RoboCop.
So
I was always like obsessed with crossovers like that. And this one got a sequel, which I don't remember it being very good. I haven't seen it in a really long time.
I never actually seen it, but I know it's regarded as like one of the worst movies by a lot of people.
And sadly, Alien versus Predator does not fit into the Alien nor Predator mythos. Mm. So I don't know what universe this exists in. Let's just throw it in the Freddy versus Jason verse.
Yeah,
Give it a little home. But did you enjoy this film for what it was, or did you not fall for these marketing now, juggernauts?
You mean Freddy versus Jason or Alien versus Predator?
Both.
Okay. Alien vs. Predator, forget about. I don't think I enjoyed it at all. I don't really remember it that well. Freddy vs. Jason, I was in on. I loved that movie when it came out. I was in college at the time, and I had a blast with it. I just thought it was the most ridiculous thing, and I was so in. And I rewatched it, obviously, with my marathon the other day, and it still holds up to a degree, but it's very just icky. It's so like early 2000s, angsty white guys, you know, and like, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It just reminded me of just like listening to Limp Bizkit all day or something like that. You know, it's like, it's really got that whole thing going for it. But yeah, no, I had so much fun with it at the time though, when it came out.
And I think they did a good job with the story of bringing them together. Like, how do you write them into each other's worlds? And the idea that one needs the other to come back to life, essentially, that symbiotic relationship, I think it was done pretty well. And it was unfortunate that they didn't continue. You would think, because it was so successful, that would spawn some sequel of some kind.
Yeah.
But they both went into remake heaven. A few years later. But Alien versus Predator I like too, because you have this idea that these two worlds, you know, the aliens are the hunted spawn of the predators, who just create or use them as their training, and Earth is in the middle, and whoever wins, we lose, David.
Yeah.
I just really love the concept. I think I'm more in love with the concept than the execution, but what can you do? And then back to your MCU comparison, same thing. You're kind of bringing these characters together for some reason. And I don't know. I think it's a good reinvigorating option, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah, it's interesting that it works so well in these two particular series. Like, you know, maybe not work so well. They're not the greatest movies in the world, but they were able to come up with an interesting enough idea. Because I really do think, like you said, especially with Freddy vs. Jason, the idea that Freddy needs people to be scared, so who do I call? Jason.
Right.
Is really a pretty, I don't want to say stroke of genius, but it is. It kind of is. You know?
Well, I like the idea of like the owners of these franchises, you know, coming together for the greater good, entertainment.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no issues of like, well, I don't want Freddy Krueger, you know, soiling my Jason Voorhees brand. You know, they're all in it to win it. And another thing I was reminded of was the Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights had a haunted house dedicated to Freddy versus Jason.
Oh, and, nice.
Someone worked there, and I asked them about it, and they said, yeah, we make sure that every time at the end of the house, the the endings switch back and forth. So one ending, Freddy will win, one ending, Jason will win. And I was like, that's excellent. I love it.
Makes that's you want to awesome. Go back. That actually reminds me of, and I don't know how true this is, but I remember in the old message board days, like the IMDb forums and all that, there was always rumors that they were trying to get a Freddy versus Jason versus Ash from Evil Dead off the ground. But the problem was nobody wanted their guy to die. And that's why they were never able to like come to any kind of agreements on it. Because of course Ash would have, you know, won in the end. Right. Like there's no way.
But it's kind of silly though, because Jason and Freddy die all the time and they come back all the time. Exactly. So I don't
it
know
means
what
nothing.
Let Ash win. I mean, but hasn't that Ash actually, died too?
That's actually a really good point. I could have thrown like American Horror Story in the mix here, because that's something I hate about that show is nobody is ever like stays dead, and it really makes the show like impossible to like really like bother with, I feel like, because it's like if anybody's going to just come back to life, then what's the point?
That was I was thinking about TV shows too as part of this episode, and American Horror Story, whatever season, where it was 1984.
Right.
Obviously it was just drawing from every slasher movie.
Totally. But
they definitely, that season was good until it wasn't, unfortunately. Yeah. Like couldn't finish strong with that season, but it was a good concept. I loved it.
It was. Well, I'll go with another piece here. And this one, I don't know, it's a little out there, but I kind of remember when this particular movie came out, there were some negative criticisms thrown at it that it was basically just a slasher movie that didn't know it was a slasher movie because it was in reverse. And it's Mel Gibson's Apocalypto.
Okay.
And so, you know, you got your main character, I believe it was Jaguar Paw, who is basically picking off all these other people out in the woods, just killing them in gruesome ways. But you're, of course, rooting for him because, you know, the pathos of the character, and, you know, he's got some humanity to him. And I love that they were able to give a little bit of that to Jason throughout these movies, especially in Freddy versus Jason. But, you know, just with the way that he initially died in the first one, and, you know, there's this weird undercurrent of him being a kind of relatable guy, even though he's this giant monster who can't die, who keeps coming back from the dead to murder everybody.
Right.
And I love that about him.
I have not seen Apocalypto, but I do get the Jason Voorhees, his, how should I say this? Like his hesitance to kill children.
Right.
Which also applied in the Mike Myers and the Halloween films, because he, like in the first film, there's this scene where the little boy runs out of the school. He's getting bullied, and Mike Myers is just kind of standing there. He scares off the rest of the bullies, and it kind of harkens back to when he was a little boy, and maybe that's like the way his brain works. And then you flip over to Jason Voorhees, who died as a child, essentially, you know, died in the lake, and maybe his brain is, well, you know, I kill teenagers, but I draw a line. But I think there is a movie where he kills a kid, and then you're like, okay, well, I guess that hypothesis doesn't play out.
Well, that comes down to the different directors, different voices. Yeah. Like everybody has a different idea of what he will and won't do. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, though, he does seem to have a little bit of a code to him.
Yeah, because there's part 6, I think, and I think part 7, they try to restart the camp, and actual little kids are there when he's like decapitating people. So
that would be amazing if that whole movie was just him killing kids, and it's like, oh, that was the 80s, you know, like.
And then I think the NES game that's the whole point of the game, is to make sure no kids die.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's awesome.
So they knew a little bit of his personality, I suppose. They knew he was a softie at the end of the day.
That's amazing. All right. What do you got for your next one?
I think that's, I'm tapped out, David. The last one I have is a video game called Splatterhouse, which the main character is just,
I like it.
Is just who wears a hockey mask. And my honorable mention was Casey Jones from the Ninja Ninja Turtles movie 1990 because
I thought about talking about Casey Jones as well.
Only because he wears a hockey mask.
Absolutely. He's going on the list. Absolutely. Right. Yeah, I love it. And Splatterhouse, those games, I remember I never knew anybody with a TurboGrafx growing up, and yeah. I envied anybody with a TurboGrafx because of that game. And I finally got to play it, you know, on an emulator or something like 10 years ago or something. And those games are awesome.
I've never played it either. I just know about it through like video game YouTube. I wonder, back to Ninja Turtles, since we're seriously talking about it now, I don't know if you keep up with Scott Aukerman, but him and Sean Diston as Sprig the Whisperer, I think they're doing a binge watch of all Ninja Turtles media.
Nice.
And I didn't know, and I probably should have known as a comic book fan, but a lot of Ninja Turtle stuff is Daredevil ripoffs. So I think Splinter is their sensei, and Daredevil's sensei was named Stick, and the Ninja Clan and Daredevil was the Hand, and in Ninja Turtles, it's called the Foot Clan.
Right,
so I'm
right.
pretty sure those guys loved Jason Voorhees, and they were like, we need a guy in a hockey mask.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. So,
I'm sure that was their inspiration if they ever get asked about it.
Awesome. Well, I only have one more piece, and that is Hatchet, the Hatchet series. And I'm sure that there's plenty of other, you know, slashers we could bring up, but I you know, particularly wanted to bring it up because Victor Crowley is played by Kane Hodder. So I mean, that is like such a big tribute there, I believe. But I only ever saw the first one, and it was back when it first came out. I barely even remember these movies, but I know they have a little bit of a cult following. They've got some good deaths. I watched a little YouTube thing that had some like you know, some of the best kills, and there's some good gore. So
cool. Yeah, it features I looked up its Wikipedia page right now, and it has cameos from some of your favorite cinematic villains. So that's pretty cool.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. So we should finish this up by, of course, talking about some of these fan films, which also are, of course, inspired by Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Of course, there's Never Hike Alone and Never Hike in the Snow from Vincent DeSanti. That's the ones that you had tweeted at me about. There's also the F-13 Vengeance, which I haven't seen, but I know was pretty popular, I believe. And I know there's others as well. I mean, these movies, while this franchise continues to be kind of like locked up in legal battles, this franchise gets to live on through these fan films, it seems like.
Yeah, and these two are so well made that I almost treated them like films when I sat down to watch them. I kind of made like a movie night out of it, even though I think they fall short of feature length. Mm-hmm. But did you watch them before or after you binged the series? I wonder if you picked up on any of their nuances.
Yeah, I watched them after. I made them the last things. And I mean, I thought they were great as well. Lots of little, you know, Easter eggs and stuff like that. Yeah. And just well made, you know. I thought Never Hike Alone was better of the two as far as like an overall, you know, a story is concerned. But there's a lot to love about both of these. And he's clearly a good filmmaker. I mean, I would not be mad at all if once things clear up, they were to give this guy the rights to make a movie.
Yeah, I think it's Womp Stomp Films is the production. Mm-hmm. And then I can't remember the director's name, but he also plays Jason in the films. And one of my favorite YouTube channels right now is Toy Galaxy. And one of their catchphrases is it canon? And so I watch these films hoping to fit it somewhere, a la Part 9, where I try to fit it into the mythology in my brain.
Right.
I tried to fit Don't Hike Alone and then the prequel, Don't Hike in the Snow. If you look at his mask, there's no hatchet divot from Part 4. So,
interesting. Yeah.
I don't know if that was, if they're trying to start their own continuity or... And it's just stupid stuff like that I think about when I watch stuff. The other thing I wanted to mention was another podcast. I'm not being paid for any of these advertisements, but in Voorhees We Trust with Gorhees and Rust, I think they Matt Gourley and Paul Rust do like 3-hour episodes dedicated to like these horror film installments.
And that's great. I got to listen to that. I like
one of their running gags in the Voorhees series is, why isn't there an installment where it's like Jason in the Snow, like Friday the 13th, Jason in the Snow, I think is their pitch, their elevator pitch. And
that's awesome.
When I saw the Never Hike in the Snow, I was like, God damn it, they've done it. They put Jason in the snow. And I was really, I don't want to say it's just too short. I was let down. I was hoping for like a feature length wintry adventure with Jason Voorhees, and I feel like it cuts off like right at where you're kind of in like the first act, second act of a Friday the 13th movie.
Right.
I don't want to spoil anything, but it just feels like they had something going and then it kind of pulled the brakes on it. But I believe they're like parts. I think they're doing parts.
Right.
So I don't know what they're doing over there.
Yeah. Hopefully they do continue it and keep up the quality the same that it's been, because I would love to see a complete story out of that. And, you know, Never Hike Alone feels like a complete story as it is, just like a complete short film. But Hike in the Snow needs to continue.
I like that one a lot more, and it fits in enough in our world and that world to kind of pander to both sides, where it's like, oh, you know, kids on YouTube, they'll like it.
Mm-hmm.
The 40, 50, 60-year-old people that are, you know, Jason heads or whatever they call themselves. They're like, oh yeah, this kind of feels like, you know, part one and two, kind of that classic camp, classic hiking in the woods,
sure,
sort of thing. So I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, absolutely. That does it for me then about Puzzle Pieces. I have one closing thought I was going to bring up, and then also a question for you, and I'll see if you have any other closing thoughts that we didn't quite get to. One thing that I was thinking about was using Leprechaun in Space as a puzzle piece until I looked it up and found out that happened 5 years before Jason X. So I,
wow, I was
very surprised by that.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
everybody was heading to space at some point, and
I guess so.
Ben had come up with Jigsaw in Space for Saw 8.
Yeah,
and I was really stoked waiting for that eighth installment because they were coming out every year too, those Saw movies.
Sure.
And then. Yeah. At 7, they stopped. They retired. And I was like, dang, so close.
Did they make a 3D one? I'm sure they did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They had to have. I think that was, I think it was Saw 3D.
Yeah. That makes total sense.
You're contractually obligated to do a 3D film, the third installment.
You have to. And I was just going to ask you, what did you think of the reboot? I don't know how you liked
it. I watched that one. I think I've only seen that one once.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think for a second. Let me try to, I remember not hating it, because usually if I really dislike a movie, I just pick it apart, you know, much like vultures would pick apart one of Jason's victims.
Sure.
But I don't remember. I think it was, yeah, just kind of a middling thing. The one I really didn't like was the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. That was the one I kind of had a big problem with.
Haven't seen that yet.
There was one good idea, I think, with how the kids stayed awake. They used like this jolt medicine or something like that was a little interesting, but everything else kind of fell flat with me. But how did you feel about the remake? Did you enjoy that one?
I thought it was pretty good. It was, you know, certainly not one of the best of the series or anything like that. And it falls victim to just, I feel like it's kind of too try hard, you know? But I thought there were some fun kills in it and a couple of fun moments. Like, I think it definitely celebrated Jason, at least in a good way. So that's the best thing I could say about it.
Yeah, it also came out at like that time where a lot of stuff was getting rebooted. It may have gotten lost in the the ruckus, because Halloween 2007 had, what is it, 2 years prior? So I think everyone was clamoring for a remake of the Mount Rushmore of horror.
Right, right.
And I think Halloween was pretty successful, 2007. So they probably greenlit a lot of stuff and that was what we got. But I don't remember disliking it, so maybe I have to go back and recheck it and let you know how a rewatch treats me.
Well, are there any other things about the Friday the 13th series that you kind of had in mind that you wanted to talk about here, or do you think we kind of covered it?
I think it's one of those film franchises, like I mentioned, where that mythology is what really draws me in. And as a kid, you know, I wasn't allowed to really watch them. So by when I became an adult, I, you know, dove right in hoping to, you know, not to steal your thunder, but to put like the installments together to see if there was like a linear storyline.
Sure.
And for the most part, it does it. So if you're into that kind of filmmaking, I suppose, or that kind of storytelling, you know, if you can get past the violence and the crudity, it's a pretty entertaining series of films. I don't know. I've always had a soft spot for it.
Yeah, which one is your favorite?
I hate to say it. It's like the fan's favorite is part six. It's the first one. I feel like you mentioned earlier, it knows what it is, and it's kind of like making fun of itself. And it's the first one where Jason is like funny. He's playing for laughs.
Yes.
I love it. My least favorite is five, because I don't remember anything about it ever. And I've seen it like three times. and the one I love ragging on the most is part eight, where, you know, again,
so ridiculous.
Just like Jason goes to hell. It's like Jason takes Manhattan 14 minutes remaining in the film. He eventually gets to Manhattan.
Right.
And it's kind of a letdown. But I like talking about these movies. I like making fun of them. But I never really hate any of them. So
yeah,
it's a good series. What's your favorite?
It was fun marathoning them. I think most likely four.
Okay.
But six is great. And I don't know. I actually do, as crazy as marathoning a 13 movie series, including the reboot, or actually 12, including the reboot, right?
Yeah.
As crazy as that is for me, someone who doesn't usually marathon movies, I could picture myself doing it again sometime, because I just had so much fun with these movies, and I'd be interested to see how my ranking changes as I watch them again, knowing what I'm kind of getting into as I get into it the second time through.
Yeah. And you start to like hand pick your favorites. So like around Halloween, I'll pick, you know, we watched part two and part six just because it's, you know, they're just fun to watch. Have you binged the Nightmare on Elm Street series? That's another good one to go all the way through.
That'll probably be next for me. Whenever I get the urge to sit on the couch for five straight days, that's probably gonna be next. So
that's another good one. And I find it interesting, like four, because that's like the Tommy trilogy. He's kind of the center of attention, four, five, and six.
And
that's another,
it's a good
kind
story
of, that's another kind of like thing that these movies do. They create like a little mini trilogy within the franchise. I always find that interesting,
just like the MCU.
Just like the MCU. And with that.
I think we wrap it up. This was great. I always ask my guests if they've seen anything else recently they'd like to recommend to our listeners.
Oh, that's a good question. I wasn't prepared. Let's see. Can I recommend something I didn't like?
Sure.
I'll do two. There's a movie I'm looking forward to that I thought I was going to watch, and that was Happiest Season. I think that's a Kristen Stewart and Dan Levy, I think, are in it. And it's like a holiday movie. And I think it was written by one of these improv comedians that I really like, Mary Holland. And that comes out at the end of the month, towards the end of the month. And what I thought was, because I knew that was a holiday movie that had just been released, or I thought it had just been released. So when I saw Holiday on Netflix, I was like, oh, this must be it.
You watched the wrong movie.
And so expecting a you know, very clever, funny holiday movie, something that, you know, breaks from the mold, I found out that Holiday was not the movie I was thinking of.
Oh, and, no, that sucks.
And it's kind of a very, it's very paint by numbers. You know how Freddy versus Jason was like your kind of grimy early 2000s it had like that look to it. The holiday kind of feels like just a, I don't want to say poorly written, but a plainly written romantic comedy where the characters don't really grow. They don't like transform in any way.
I know exactly what you mean.
And then watch Happiest Season, which I'm hoping is going to be really good. So you can, you can forget about Holiday after you've seen it.
I just heard about that yesterday. I think the trailer came out for Happiest Season, and it looks really good.
And then I don't want to keep it too long, but I also watched Christmas Tree Lane on the Hallmark Channel, which
getting in the spirit.
I think this year I'm going to do like a Hallmark Christmas marathon, which, you know, I think a lot of people use as fodder to criticize or kind of make fun of. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to try to watch them for what they intend to be. And that one was pretty good. They were trying to save Christmas Tree Lane. It was their version of the rec center. And guess what? They did it.
I'm very happy to hear that. I am so happy to hear that. I like an entire episode with all this murder and blood and gore, but we're going to end on a positive note.
There you go.
That's important. Yeah. So. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Why don't you tell people again where they can find your podcast and everything?
The Not Just New Movies podcast is back, and you can follow us on Twitter at NJNM podcast. And then I use my personal Twitter as at SpaceWhale2020X. So there's not a lot of content there, but at NJNM podcast, you can find our new episodes and connect with us there.
Awesome. I was listening to the Halloween 3 one today, and I was enjoying it.
Yeah, we were getting some of the ring rust off. We hadn't been doing it for like a year and a half or so. So hopefully that one was, hopefully you enjoyed that one.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you so much for doing it, and maybe we'll get you back again one of these days.
Yeah, I had a great time. I appreciate it again for having me on.
It's the Meet for Tea cast, an extension of Meet for Tea, the Valley Review, an arts and literary journal based in Western Massachusetts, featuring artists and writers from all over the world.
3,000 years is not an overnight or an oversight either.
She looked to be in her mid-20s. She was wearing a loose gray top with black yoga pants. Nick was wearing cargo shorts and a t-shirt. He was conscious of how slow he was.
The Meet for Tea cast features interviews with artists, writers, and musicians, spoken word, music performances, and other arts and literary related items.
So when you were hitting those serves, who was on the other side of the net?
Nobody.
Oh.
Nobody. It was.
So that makes it even more like playing against a ghost.
Down. Yes. Feathers. I'm allergic to down.
With selections from Meet for Tea events, such as the Cirques, which are release parties for each issue of the magazine, and other Meet for Tea sponsored events. Do check it out. The Meet for Tea cast, wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about the Friday the 13th series. Lots of great movies we got into in there. That was a fun one. So thank you, Tyler, for joining me on that. And for everyone listening, if you're not already subscribed to Piecing It Together, make sure you get subscribed. We've got a lot of Piecing It Together coming your way in the coming weeks. We're starting to get into award season, so there's going to be some of that. But then, of course, there's lots of other classic stuff to cover as well. We even have another Breaking It Apart episode that's already been recorded for a very different movie than Friday the 13th. But, that's a little hint, but it's not really, you can't guess it based on the many, 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 many years of classic movies that we could be covering. There's absolutely no way you could guess it, but if you do guess it, good for you. Anyway, lots of Piecing It Together coming your way. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what we do here on the show, we'd really appreciate it if you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And of course, the greatest thing in the world that you could do is just share the show. We love it when you share the show with your friends. And, you know, we love doing it. And it's always great when you guys share it. It really makes the biggest difference because then lots more people will hear it. And that is awesome. We also have a Patreon, though, like I said at the top of the show. And if you really want to support the show, you could always check that out. Lots of great content on there. All that stuff I mentioned at the top of the show. But I also have some new music coming to it very soon as well. So lots of stuff on the Patreon to check out. And other than that, thank you as always for listening. Speaking of music, I am going to close this thing out with a piece from a slasher movie that I did some music for. And I actually released this as a single in between albums a few years back. This is called Travis McLennan, the theme from Rust. Rust was a horror film shot here in Las Vegas, and it's a very Friday the 13th, maybe more Texas Chainsaw Massacre styled horror film from director Joe Lujan, who is a very prolific director here in Las Vegas, has done a ton of horror films. I've done music for a couple of them. This was the main theme for its killer. It's Jason Voorhees, Travis McLennan. And yeah, it's available as a single on iTunes and also on Spotify and all those places. But you're going to hear it right now. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.